welcome to Inside Scoop Live, the live audio program brought to you by ReaderViews.com. I'm your host, Juanita Watson, and today I brought on to the program author Marion Volkman to talk about her brand new book titled Children and Traumatic Incident Reduction, which is published by Loving Healing Press. So Marion Volkman is the Director of Ability Enhancement Services in Ann Arbor, Michigan, and has worked in the fields of trauma resolution and personal growth for 33 years. She is a frequent and enthusiastic presenter at trauma conferences, teaches traumatic incident reduction and applied metapsychology in the U.S., Canada, and Europe, and maintains a busy practice with clients all over North America and Europe. In addition to being certified as a certified trauma specialist through the Association of Traumatic Stress Specialists, she is certified in all levels of TIR and applied metapsychology as a practitioner, trainer, and supervisor. She is author of two books, Life Skills, Improve the Quality of Your Life with Metapsychology, and Turtle Dolphin Dreams, which is a work of fiction. She has three more books currently in the works and several more in the planning stages. Some of her many interests include human potential and interspecies communication. Sounds very interesting. So more about Marion Volkman and her books can be found at www.tirbook.com. So just happy to have Marion on the program today. Welcome to Inside Scoop Live, Marion.
Thanks, Juanita. Thanks for having me.
Yeah, great. You know, so you were here to talk about your new book, Children and Traumatic Incident Reduction, which is actually, you edited this book. It's a compilation of information from parents, educators, social workers, and therapists. So why did you decide at this point to get all of this information together in one book?
Well, actually, it was my spouse who started this project, Victor Volkman. He was doing interviews with people, quite some time ago to get more interesting articles for our website. And then he put together a book called Beyond Trauma, and it had a chapter on TIR in relation to children, traumatic incident reduction in relation to children. And then he kept finding out more great stories and more great people who are doing interesting things with children. And he decided, you know what, we need a whole book about that. And after he started into this project, he turned to me and said, how about if you edit it?
Mm-hmm.
So that's how I got into this project, and it's just been an absolute delight. I'm really glad he asked me to do it.
Oh, that's great. Is there not a lot out there about TIR at this point, and specifically with the work with children?
Well, let's see. The main website for finding out about traumatic incident reduction is www.tir.org,
mm-hmm.
and there are quite a few articles on there that Victor has done and a few that I have done, so there is some stuff there, but there's a lot more in the book that we were able to pull together because we called some of the people we've already worked with and said, tell us more, because mm-hmm. we know you have great stories and we want to hear them, and also we wanted to find out specifically what they were doing with the children that was working and how that was different from working with adults and things like that.
Okay. So tell listeners what TIR actually is.
Okay. It's traumatic incident reduction. It's a very simple, elegant way of reducing the trauma, reducing the resistance and the pain and the negativity from any bad incident that's happened to us. And we don't get to fussy about what constitutes a trauma because we're operating within a person-centered framework. So what's traumatic for that person is what they say is traumatic for them.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Like some people are much more resilient and they would go through something that somebody else would experience as traumatic and not be bothered by it. Other people are more sensitive or whatever and they, you know, they experience something that's very traumatic that maybe another person would take in their stride. So traumatic incident reduction directly addresses, it's a form of exposure work where the person's actually looking at what happened to them. And sometimes there's a resistance to doing that because, you know, it's kind of scary to go back into it, but we find really that children are less resistive than adults to going in there and just facing whatever it is and talking about it in a really safe environment where they can say anything, They can feel anything. Nobody's going to criticize them. It allows the person to really look at what happened in detail and look over and over it a number of times until really there's nothing left on that incident that's bothering them.
Why is it that children are more responsive or receptive to this?
Well, I guess you could say that for one thing, they haven't had the time to build up a lot of defense strategies that adults have.
Mm-hmm.
They don't have such a thick shell, as it were. They're more open, right?
Mm-hmm.
And they have, even though some children have had horrible things happen to them, you know, they don't have a whole lifetime's worth. They just have however many years they've been alive. So, in a sense, they have less to deal with in terms of how many actual traumatic incidents they've experienced, right?
Right, right. It's interesting that you say that what may be traumatic for one person may not be considered a traumatic experience for another, and I was wondering how you actually did define a traumatic experience. So why is it that one person may really be affected by something when another person may not?
There are so many things that feed into that, I think, and we're just beginning to really think about that and really start to understand something about what makes for resilience.
Mm-hmm.
It's a subject I'm really interested in. I heard this wonderful woman, Susie Sanders, who's written a book about resilience. That's her whole thing that she works on all the time. She did this wonderful presentation. I thought, resilience, that is so interesting. So I kind of Googled it to see how much was being thought about, and there are dozens and dozens of studies being done on resilience. So people are trying to figure out what makes somebody stronger and more able to just brush something off,
right,
as opposed to feel like they've been harpooned, you know?
Mm-hmm.
Some of it might be genetic. So a lot of it might be upbringing and how secure the person feels in themselves and in their intimate connections, like with their family. It could also be, you know, health. Like if they're fairly strong and healthy, they might be able to be more resilient.
Mm-hmm.
And also just how many traumas they've piled up to that point, because sometimes you can go along and you can take it, and then like one more thing happens and you kind of lose it. You know
break.
What I mean?
Yeah, yes. Fascinating.
Yeah.
Really fascinating. So would you say then that TIR is actually a preventative or even maybe a cure for PTSD?
Would I say that? Yes, I would say that. I'm not sure everybody would. I know that in the psychology realm, there's a certain hesitance to use the C word.
Yes, here. I know.
Yes, but no, we've seen it many times. And we don't actually worry about diagnosis too much because there are so many people who might not quite qualify for a diagnosis of PTSD, yet they've had traumas in their life that have had a significant effect.
Mm-hmm.
And so whether they're diagnosable as having PTSD or not, we still want to address that trauma and get it to the point where it's behind the person and they're not dragging it around like a cannonball behind them.
What happens with the accumulative effects of trauma? What happens in the body? I know that you know, mentally and physically this can really, really build up. What are you people?
Yeah, well, I cannot claim to be an expert in the psychobiology of trauma, an absolutely fascinating field, but certainly in all my years of working with people, I've seen it time and time again that as a person accumulates trauma, they not only mentally try to adjust to that and carry it somehow, but they physically kind of store it in their body.
Mm-hmm.
And that's being talked about a lot more now. I think that people who did body work like massage therapists and people like that have been aware of this for a long, long time, but it's actually starting to enter, you know, mainstream therapy realms where they talk about what happens in the body as a result of experiencing trauma and not fully being able to work through it and resolve it. So we do accumulate, and I'm absolutely sure of that. And the other thing that I think is so important, Juanita, is that a lot of what passes for normal in terms of human functioning is actually pretty terrible compared to what it could be.
Yeah.
You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
It's like people can cope with a certain amount of pain. They can cope with a certain amount of emotional distress, And they look around and they see other people are coping with these things too, and they say, okay, well, that must be what life is, you
right,
know?
Right.
We just drag around this sack of cannonballs behind
right,
us until we can't stand it anymore. And actually, it does not have to be like that. We can really put these things behind us. We can really completely let go of them to the point where they don't affect us. We don't carry it in our body or in our mind or our emotions.
We typically don't see very healthy models of that in our world today.
No, we don't. The emphasis is all on adapting to what's happening rather than really resolving, you know, what's happened that's bothering us.
Mm-hmm. So what's the difference between the way a child copes with trauma compared to an adult? Is there any difference?
Well, they certainly, all human beings have a tendency to stuff it, right?
Mm-hmm.
We scramble to our feet, we pull ourselves together, we say we're fine, right? And where an adult might cope with stored up pain by drinking or, you know, other kinds of activities, children don't usually have access to something like that. So they act out or they become very withdrawn, you know, really the typical ways of human beings coping with things, but in children, it shows up in slightly different ways than it does with adult human beings. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
Okay, so, you know, a lot of when a child is being bad, you know, quote unquote being bad,
right,
some of that well might be coming from, you know, something that's happened to them that they have not been able to assimilate or integrate or understand or cope with in some way.
Mm-hmm. That must be confusing then for a parent when they start, you know, involving themselves in this work or trying to understand it, because, you know, how do you know with your child then that they're not just going through a regular developmental stage or maybe it's a trauma that they're processing?
Yeah, well, here's the thing. There's so much to know about this, more than we can really cover here, but if there's, I like to tell parents, if they see a significant change, like all of a sudden the behavior or the mood of the child changes for the worse, then you want to see, if you can, what happened. Did something happen there?
Mm-hmm.
And, you know, some parents are actually brilliant at working with their children. There's two who shared very generously with us in the book about their experience with their child. Then some parents can't do it. They can't cope. They can't be just be there for the child without their own emotions becoming, you know, too
overwhelming.
So that's definitely time to seek some professional help.
Yeah.
You know, it doesn't have to be this giant thing like, oh, my gosh, is there something wrong with my child?
Right.
I think if we got a more open attitude toward mental fitness the way we do toward physical fitness and say, you know, I don't quite feel as good as I used to. I better go get this checked out, you know?
Yeah.
Instead of making it mean that, you know, there's something wrong with you or
there still is a stigma to that.
Exactly. Mm-hmm.
So what specifically is important when you're trying to understand trauma suffered by a child?
Well, we come at it from not a diagnostic point of view, again, but just getting the child to express what happened. And some are very, very open to just doing that. They just will. And the ones who are more reticent, either they can't express themselves clearly or they're too traumatized to do so.
Mm-hmm.
That's where art therapy can be very useful.
Mm-hmm. And you talk about this.
Yeah, and there's quite a bit about that in the book.
Yes.
There's two women who do a lot with that, and they've done very, very excellent, gotten really good results with children from that.
So how do you, Marian, how do you facilitate a TIR session? Kind of give us the step-by-step of what this process really is about and what's integrating and how it all works.
Okay. Well, it's so simple, it seems like it's unbelievable because,
yeah,
you know, when people come, I teach it all the time, and then there's a certain look people get in their eyes like, oh, this is it? It's this? You know,
right.
Yes, it's that simple. You just have the person contact it, and you set it up with various things. You get them to remember, you know, when it was, how long it was, things like that, to kind of orient them.
Mm-hmm.
And then you have them just go through and experience it and then tell you about what happened. And you go through it as many times as you need to until either that incident resolves which you can see in the person's face, and you told them, let me know when you feel like you're getting done with this thing.
Mm-hmm.
And the other thing that can happen is that sometimes there's an earlier incident that the person may or may not remember that's hooked into that one, and it won't resolve until you get the earlier one and resolve that, too.
That's interesting, the way they can sort of stagger on top of each other like that.
Yeah. Yeah. There's something about how we, you know, how memories are made and formed in mind. It's so, so interesting to study that stuff. But interestingly enough, without having to know about how it all works, we can address it very effectively.
Mm-hmm. So the verbal aspect of it actually unravels the locking in the physical and in the psyche, that trauma?
Yeah, both going through it, just re-experiencing it. Usually people choose to go through it silently. Some people talk all the way through. For many people, they find it's more powerful to go through it silently and just kind of run it like a movie, like a video,
mm-hmm.
and then tell what happened, and then go back to the beginning and go through it again, re-experience it. And this time, they might see different things because there's resistance, there's pain, there's maybe some unconsciousness, and so you peel off layers by going through it a number of times.
Mm-hmm.
Really cool thing is eventually you get to what we call an end point. The end point is where you're done with that piece. And that's a really different kind of way of working than traditional therapy, because rather than basing it on an arbitrary period of time, we're basing it on that person just completely brightening up and saying, you know, it doesn't bother me anymore, or, gosh, it's like it's not there anymore, or it's behind me for the first time since it happened, things like that.
Yeah, that really is incredible, and that reminds me of when I actually talked with David Powell, who wrote his book regarding post-traumatic stress and his experience in the Vietnam War, and how, you know, the horrors that he saw and the unbelievable post-traumatic stress symptoms that he was having, and how now, I mean, it just isn't there. It's just so profound how this work really, I mean, this gentle, simple work really does create an effective change.
Right, and one thing that I really thought about when I was putting the book together and editing it and calling the contributors and getting some more information and thinking about, okay, what are we going to put on the back of this book that'll make people want to read it, you know?
Mm-hmm.
And I realized something to me that was very profound. So you could take somebody like David Powell's a perfect example and say, okay, years and years ago he suffered these traumas, and we can go back today and we can release them. It doesn't matter how long ago it was,
right?
We can release them, you see? But then I realized, well, wait a minute, how about if we can work with children, and if they've experienced something really bad for them, allow them to release it now and not have to carry it for so many years and have it be part of their mental world for all those years, you know?
Mm-hmm. Now, what do you have to be concerned with working with children as they go through these critical developmental stages in their early years? Or is there? Do you even concern yourself with that?
The only one I would think about is that I remember going to a conference and they were talking about children and grief, and they said that if a child has a significant loss early in life, they will have to re-grieve that at different developmental stages. And that was I thought that was very profound, and I saw that in my own life with a child I'm very close to. She had to kind of go through the grieving process at different stages after she'd lost a parent at a very early age. Now, with something that's a trauma that's not a loss, I think we need some studying done on that to see. As far as I've been able to see so far, if a child sees something horrible, or they have to undergo something like surgery, or they have an accident, usually, from what I've seen, traumatic incident reduction, once they're done with it, they're done with it, and it doesn't usually come up again.
Mm.
So I'm not sure how much developmental, you know, stages have an impact on how thoroughly children resolve things, and I really can't make a claim about that. All I can say is what I've seen so far is it looks very robust, that once they're done with that piece, they're actually done.
Mm-hmm.
Did I answer your question?
Yeah, yes, you did. It sounds like that also, that this is such a new form of therapy that there really is a need for more study being
done.
Oh,
yeah, definitely. Mm-hmm. Meanwhile, we know we're getting fantastic results.
Yeah.
And, you know, one of the women that we interviewed, Renee Carmody in Florida, she works with children who are victims of domestic violence, and they have seen and experienced things the like of which I have never seen in my life. I mean, much more traumatic than anything I've ever experienced myself. So to see these little kids be able to, you know, draw it and tell about it and, you know, come through it, and really sometimes they have a pretty profound realization about something, and sometimes they just feel like, ah, I'm done. I can walk away from this now, instead of it sitting on them like a cloud, you know?
Yes, yeah.
It's really inspiring to me.
It is very inspiring. I mean, we can just learn so much from these children. It's incredible.
And we'll be back with more Inside Scoop Live after these important announcements.
Amazon recently introduced Kindle, a revolutionary ebook reader that has outpaced expectations in sales. This is a sign that more people are turning to the digital delivery system of books as the practice of digital downloads spread. Let us help you get your printed book or ebook available for instant purchase on Amazon Kindle. You set your own price and collect 35% of list price on each sale. We will upload your book and optimize it for the best performance on Kindle. Please go to readerviews.com and link on the Services for Authors tab on the top menu bar. There you will find a link for more information on how we can upload your book for Kindle viewing today. Welcome back to Inside Scoop Live. Just to remind you, I'm talking with Marion Volkman, author of Children and Traumatic Incident Reduction, Creative and Cognitive Approaches. You can find out more about Marion through her website, tirbook.com. And, you know, you talk about the fact that TIR actually can work faster in children than adults. Is that just because of the accumulated effects of trauma through the years in adults, so it's quicker in children?
Partly that, partly lack of defenses, I think, you know.
Mm-hmm.
They're just more wide open than adults are.
Mm-hmm.
They're consequently more willing. And if you can show them, you know, they say, oh, this terrible thing happened to me, and I feel really bad, and you say, okay, well, I've got something you can do that'll make it better. They say, okay, great, sure, sign me up, let's go. You know, adults are like, well, tell me some more about this, you know.
Right.
They're more cautious. Yeah.
Right. Seems like, you know, with trauma, people cut themselves off with that emotional aspect, that part where they feel, because it's too painful. So do you see that when people do go through the TIR, children or adults, that they feel more?
Mm-hmm. They're more open and free and spontaneous and in the moment.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, for sure.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I heard about a radio interview, I think it was radio interview, was done with Ted Kaczynski's mother,
mm-hmm.
Gina Burma.
Right.
And she told this story. I didn't hear this myself, but somebody told me about it. She said that when he was a tiny child, he was very warm and affectionate and spontaneous and bubbly and open and, you know, cuddly and everything. And then he experienced some horrendous illness. I'm not sure what it was, but they kept him in isolation for 6 months in the hospital.
Oh, boy.
Basically in virtual isolation.
Hmm.
And when he came out, he was, like, stiff and unresponsive. She could not get him to connect to her. She could not get him to connect with her.
Really?
Isn't that sad?
Oh.
So, I mean, that tells us something about, we've got to work more effectively and gently and lovingly with children in the first place,
yeah.
Not, you know, cause traumas, for heaven's sakes, and then, you know, working with children who can't even talk, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There is a really interesting book called Tears and Tantrums, Why Babies and Children Cry,
mm-hmm.
And she says that little kids, even, you know, pre-verbal children, they can actually deal with trauma by crying. If you hold them and you don't try and stop them,
let them
cry. They'll actually work through something by themselves.
Really?
Isn't that interesting?
So how do you work with traumas that are from maybe pre-verbal time when a child's a baby?
Well, if I'm working with a person who's able to do traumatic incident reduction, and we usually say the youngest I had ever worked with was 6 years old, but Rini in Florida says she doesn't take them usually under 5 years old, and she's had really good results as young as that. Can you believe that?
Incredible.
So the thing is that a trauma can happen when somebody's very, very young, before they're even able to talk.
Right.
But one of the beauties of TIR is you have them go through it silently and experience it, and then they sort of come out the other side, and then you say, tell me what happened, and then they'll tell you, you know, they're now verbalizing what they experienced, but they didn't have to see it in words, feel it in words as they were going through it silently.
What if there isn't, like, a solid memory of it, but there is more of a sense memory, a feeling?
Oh, yeah, that's fine. We start with whatever they've got, and by going through whatever, even if it's quite vague, going through it a number of times, the memory develops and they're able to see it.
That's just incredible.
It is. And what's another interesting thing is there's lots of uproar on the subject of false memory, you know?
Right.
And the thing about that is, it can, you know, if a therapist suggests something to somebody, it's kind of putting something there where maybe there was something or there wasn't, you know? But we don't do any of that. We're working in a person-centered, client-centered way. And so we take what the person gives us and we work with that. We don't ever say, oh, don't you think it might be this?
Right.
At all. So
right.
We don't have to worry about putting something there. And then as the person goes through it, they get to see, you know, layers come off. And even if something's been suggested to them, oh, probably this happened to you, as they go through it a number of times, they begin to see it more clearly, and they say, no, no, that wasn't it. It's this, you know, and they can, when you get truth of it, that's when you get the resolution.
So how receptive is mainstream mental health professionals to traumatic incident reduction?
That's a very good question.
Yeah.
One thing I've seen is that there seem to be sort of two main camps. There was an email discussion list I was on for a while, quite a while, a number of years, and it was all about trauma-related stuff. And there were really significantly two camps of people. One was what I would call the old guard, the ones who said, you know, we went to school for umpteen years.
Right.
Do this, and we've always done it this way, and this is the only thing we know, and we don't want to hear about this other stuff. And as soon as you said you could get a result fast, they figured you were a quack.
Right.
They just had complete resistance. And then there was another group, and I tend to think of them as younger, but that's not really fair. You know, I'm sure there's people of all ages who can be open and, you know, seeking and stuff like that. And those people, you know, as soon as somebody said, well, you know, I think I've got something that works better here, they're saying, great, tell me about it. I want to know what this is.
Yeah,
so
yeah.
It varies from person to person, shall we say, and probably from institution to institution as well. And I know that there are some universities where they're doing really interesting, forward-looking work, and there are some that are back in the Stone Age still doing the same old stuff.
Right. Well, it's interesting because a lot of those older models really would have children going through major process for a long, long time. And I would imagine that that in itself would almost be somewhat of a traumatic experience for children.
It could be. It depends on so much on the practitioner, the therapist, how they relate to the child. If they're being a positive, you know, if they're giving the child unconditional positive regard, that in itself could be therapeutic, you know. But if they're being negative or critical in any way or judgmental, I don't think that would be very helpful at all.
I'm just thinking of the idea of a child thinking, well, there's something wrong with me, you know, I'm having to do all of this therapy. I mean, they're smart. They know that maybe their friends aren't doing that, you know.
That's true.
So would that be a traumatic? I don't know.
Well, it could be, especially as you said, there's the stigma connected to it. So,
yeah.
You know, if they say, you know, the teacher says, oh, you know, you've got to go for your appointment now, and looks at them like, you know, there's something wrong with you. Yeah.
Right, right.
As you say, they're not stupid. They pick up on stuff really fast. There's one other thing, if I could just interject.
Yes.
In the older models, I've done a lot of reading. And in some of the older models, it's sort of embedded in there is the idea you're never really going to get over this. You are scarred for life, you know.
Mm-hmm.
There's now there's something that's happened to you that's always going to be part of you, and that's true. I mean, if something bad happens to us, it's not like the memory is going to disappear or that fact of our life doesn't exist.
Right.
But what's true is we can completely integrate that, come to terms with it, and move on stronger than ever, not weakened by it.
That's a big, big difference.
Yes.
Was this book, putting this book out, kind of a call for you, for people in the mainstream mental health profession to start really considering this work? Or is this more of a book for parents and the layperson?
Well, we tried to make it really for everybody. So, you know, certainly practitioners, therapists who are working with children, I would hope would find this of great interest.
Mm-hmm.
But also parents and educators can learn a lot from it, and a lot of simple things that they can do that can make things better, and how to find somebody if their child does need help, how to, you know, to start thinking about, I want somebody who's going to really work in a person-centered way rather than coming from some model that is not as positive.
Mm-hmm. Are you talking, doing workshops or any kind of seminars with people in some of the universities or in some of the big hospitals, the mental health field?
Some of my colleagues are, yeah, for
okay,
sure.
Okay, great, great. So the information is getting out there slowly.
Yes, slowly. We're doing our best to get it out there, and doing the books is one way to, you know,
yeah,
to make it accessible to more people.
Most definitely. So is there any childhood trauma that can't be worked out with TIR?
I don't believe so.
Mm.
Let me make a little bit of a qualifier to that. One question is whether people with closed head injury can focus well enough and can actually process this stuff in the way that we're asking them to do in traumatic incident reduction. I don't think we know enough to say about that. I certainly wouldn't promise that. I would say, you know, it's possible, we could try it, and we don't know yet. And, you know, some people are born with some kind of condition, whether it's genetic or, you know, a birth defect or something that happened during birth or something like that, that makes them unable to focus, you know, unable to stay with it.
Mm-hmm.
So there's other ways of working with people like that. We do, you know, it is fairly demanding to do TIR. Most people can do it. And I don't think the type of trauma is ever a problem, because every kind of horrific trauma you could ever imagine has been successfully dealt with using TIR.
That's just amazing. Do you have an experience with working with someone that you'd like to share, just to demonstrate how powerful this work is?
There was a friend of a friend of a friend of mine had heard about the kind of work I was doing. And so somehow or other she had the idea that, you know, this could work for an allergy. And she and her husband were talking about it, and her son heard this, and he said, okay, I want to do it, because the situation with him is he was allergic to dogs and cats. And he wanted to have a dog, and his parents said, don't be silly, you're allergic to him, you can't have him. So he heard his parents talking about this, so he said, okay, I'm in, do it, I want to do this. And so she called me up, and she said, I want you to do this to get rid of my son's allergy. And I said, well, you know, I really can't promise a physical result like that, you know. But, you know, I asked her a few more questions. It turned out that he had had two incidents where he was bitten by dogs
in
his short life. He was only six at the time.
Okay.
So I said, okay, you know, just tell him I don't know if this will work or not, but I'm certainly willing to try. So on that basis, he was willing to try. And we went through the more recent dog bite incident several times, and then we went to the earlier one. We went through that several times. And usually that's it, but he wanted to go back to the later one, so he went back to that a couple more times. And then he just said, okay, I'm done. And with an adult, usually it's a little more like they'll verbalize some kind of realization, or they'll say, wow, before I felt this way and now I feel that way.
Mm-hmm.
With him, he was just really, you know, his attention was riveted on this thing. He was right in there. And then, you know, he came out of it and he felt like he was done. So
that
I said,
it.
Okay,
mm-hmm.
we're done then. And then I didn't hear anything for a few weeks, and then I called her for some reason, and then I said, how is he doing? And she said, oh, well, you know, it worked. It's good. And I said, oh, yeah, what happened? And she said, well, every time since you worked with him, he every time he sees a dog or a cat, he goes up and rubs it all over and with his hands, and then he rubs his hands on his face and comes over to me and says, "See, Mom, I'm not allergic anymore.
Oh.
When can I get my dog?" So, I mean, again, I would never promise a physical result like that.
Right.
But that was a really clear instance where, you know, there was a physical result as a result of letting go of the trauma.
Yeah, that is an amazing story.
Yeah, I was pretty amazed myself. And again, he was the youngest I'd ever done it with. But he was highly motivated, you know. He really had a strong motivation. And that was one thing that I observed with from talking to Renee about the domestic abuse victim children, is, you know, these are not little traumas. These are big, life-changing traumas. And so these children are highly motivated to get in there and do the work and then let it go and walk away.
Mm.
Whereas somebody who had a smaller trauma, you know, they might say, yes, it was traumatic for me, but it wasn't to the degree that they're actually all that interested in getting in there and working on it. Does that make sense?
Yes, yes, absolutely. Boy, those kids with the abuse issues, they're just so courageous.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. It shows the resilience and the strength of the human spirit.
Yes, absolutely. Powerful, powerful work. So what would you suggest to a parent that they should know as a first step in helping their child if they've experienced some kind of trauma?
Just listen.
Mm.
Absolutely just listen. That is the most important thing. And if the parent feels too distressed to be able to do that, they're much better off finding somebody else to listen to the child who's not going to react, because the parent's reaction against what the child's saying is just going to make the child stuff it and not tell.
Mm.
You know what I mean?
Yes. How important is it for a parent to draw a child out in verbalizing? Is that okay, or does it have to be on the terms of the child when they're ready and they approach the parent to talk?
Well, that's a good question. It's actually pretty complicated because a lot depends on how safe that relationship is.
Okay.
You see what I mean?
Yes.
I mean, some parents don't have very good boundaries.
Right.
You know, or they're kind of narcissistic, so everything becomes about them, you know?
Mm-hmm.
They aren't going to be good at working with their child in a positive way because they don't have what it takes. You know what I mean?
Mm-hmm.
But a parent who's has a good, safe relationship with their child, where their child can come to them and say, "Mom, I did something really bad," and the mom says, "Oh, yeah, tell me about that," and the child says, "Oh, you know, I hit this kid at school, and I feel bad about it," and blah, 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 and the mom says, "Okay, well, what do you think about that now?" And the kid says, "Oh, I think it's better if I don't do that," and the mom says, "Okay," and just lets it go instead of getting into giving them a big lecture and, you know? So a lot depends on the dynamics between the parent and the child. So I wouldn't necessarily advise that a parent try to work with their own child unless they've really got an easy, you know, give and take and the child is willing and things like that. The other thing is to realize that children go through things so fast that it's hard for us to believe they've really looked at it.
Mm-hmm.
And so we have to be alert to that. If we push them past their end point, they're just going to not want to do that again and not want to participate in anything like that again. So children do tend to look at things, you could say, superficially, and I know there are some practitioners who really think that children only look at things superficially, but I don't think it's necessarily so. I think they're just faster at it, and they can let go of things easier than we can.
Right, right. Boy, that's fascinating. So
fascinating. Yeah, to me it is.
Are you planning on putting out more books with working with children in TIR?
Probably as we gather more material, we probably will, yeah. I mean, the thing is, if you study the whole subject, it kind of relates in the sense that often when we're dealing with trauma with adults, it goes back into childhood. In fact, that's one thing that's been found with veterans in particular, the ones with PTSD. I've talked to quite a number of people who work with veterans a lot, and what they've observed is that in the people who are really heavily traumatized by what's recently happened to them, almost always there's something earlier in their life that's also triggered by that.
Really?
Yeah.
So then that can be kind of a lengthy process when working with adults, really kind of getting down to those deeper layers.
It doesn't take that long, really. You'd be surprised.
Hmm.
Yeah.
Gosh.
It doesn't really take that long.
Are there a lot of practitioners out there doing this work?
Well, there's quite a number. I mean, we've trained thousands of people, and some of them we're in contact with and some aren't. The ones who become members of the Traumatic Incident Reduction Association, a lot of those are listed on the website. Some people are not listed on the website because they work through an agency and they get all their clients through the agency. They don't need random people calling them up.
Mm-hmm.
The ones that are listed on the website tend to be either in private practice or they do have some room in their schedule to deal with just anybody who contacts them. We need lots more, obviously.
Right, right. So your website for the book is tirbook.com.
Yeah, that's all the books that relate to TIR in any way.
Oh, great. Yeah. Wonderful. And the TIR website, was that tir.org?
.org, right.
Okay, great. Well, this has just been such an informative talk with you today, Mary, and our time is kind of coming to an end here. We could go on all day. It's so fascinating. Is there anything else that you wanted to put forth to your audience today?
Well, if anybody wants to look at my other two books, one of them is definitely on the TIRbook.com website, but the other one is not because it's fiction.
Mm-hmm.
So they could go to MarianneVolkman.com if they want to see the fiction book.
And that's Turtle Dolphin Dreams.
Yeah, yeah.
Mm-hmm.
It's very short. It's sort of Jonathan Livingston Seagull-sized book.
Mm, wonderful. And you have three more books in the works?
Yeah. One's fiction and the other two are nonfiction. The working titles are Perfect Happiness and True Love.
Oh, beautiful. You must be a very busy lady.
Yes, I certainly am. I don't have enough time to write. That's one complaint I have. I would like to have more time to write.
Well, thank you so much, Marian. It's been just wonderful talking with you. I hope to have you back on the program someday.
Okay, thanks, Juanita.
Okay, you take care.
Okay, you too.
All right, listeners, there we go. I've been talking with Marian Volkman. Her book, Children and Traumatic Incident Reduction, can be found through her website, tirbook.com. Also, the Traumatic Incident Reduction website is tir.org. And her personal website, MarianneVolkman.com. The local and online booksellers, I am sure that her books can be found and ordered through there as well as through Loving Healing Press, the publisher. So I hope you've enjoyed this interview. It's been just fascinating and so, so informative. And I want to thank you for tuning in today to Inside Scoop Live. I'm Juanita Watson. And until next time.